Welcome to the Mama Needs a Moment podcast. We are your hosts, Chrissy
and Cindy,
co-founders of Her Health Collective.
We are two moms obsessed with changing the way moms take care of themselves. We're so glad you're here. Let's dive in. Welcome to Mama Needs a Moment. It's an honor to be chatting with one of our directory experts. Make sure you check out our provider directory on our website. It's designed to be a one-stop shop of the best providers and experts in our community from all the different industries that serve mothers. All the experts included in the directory have been vetted by the Her Health Collective team and our top-notch professionals in the respective fields. It's a way for you to find a provider for your health needs without the overwhelm. Sakina Oyuhuru is a dedicated midwife with over 25 years of experience in the field of midwifery. She has an unwavering commitment to birth justice and believes in improving and enhancing the lives of women whose voices often go unheard, particularly within marginalized communities. Sakina is a published author. Her book, Journey to Birth, shares her life journey as a home birth midwife and the myriad of life lessons she's learned along the way. Sakina is the founder of the nonprofit called A Woman's Way, which is a community-based organization whose mission is to offer women, people, families, health information and training aimed at improving both infant and maternal health within African-American communities. She has had the privilege of serving as the director of the Childbearing Center in the Bronx, New York, and offers personalized mentorship for aspiring midwives who are looking to take their skills and practice to the next level through her A Woman's Way Warrior Midwife Training. And it's really cool how this is spelled. It's a woman with W-O-M-B-M-A-N, Woman's Way Warrior Midwife Training. Hi, Sakina.
Hello. Hi, everyone. Thanks for inviting me.
It's so wonderful to have you here. It's exciting, especially for me, to dive into this topic with you and a lot of the different questions we're going to ask you, because I had a home birth with our first. It was a planned home birth. I know a lot of people look at me like, was that on purpose? And I have to say, yes, it was on purpose. It was a planned home birth. And for our second, we also had planned to do a home birth, as we'll talk about later in the episode. Midwives have to have backing, at least when I was delivering 13 years ago, from obstetricians, and the midwife at the time had to jump through hurdles, and we ended up taking a different path. But welcome here. I'm so glad to have you.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Sakina, I am so excited to get to know you a little better. This question is going to be off the beaten path and completely random. So sure. I want you to pick a number between 1 and 10.
Okay. 7.
Ooh, this is a good one. Okay. Sakina, how do you march to the beat of your own drum?
Okay. I want to say I march to the beat of my own drum gracefully by listening to my inner voice and honoring that.
Is there something in your life that you do that goes against the beaten path and, I don't know, goes against the grain of what society says is accepted?
Well, as a practicing midwife, I'm going against the dominant culture. So my role as a midwife, which I want to say impacts every aspect of my life, I'm always mothering and midwifing something, someone. So, you know, I think that I lead with that, with my profession as the midwife. I can't ever stop being a midwife in all that I do. So, you know, that is going, you know, against the grain and really marching to my own beat, particularly because society does not really recognize midwives as they do in the same way as they do obstetricians. So if you ask society, they would say I'm marching to the beat of my own.
How did you know you wanted to be a midwife? Like, when did this dawn on you? This is my path that I want to pursue.
Yeah, that's a good question. Because most people don't really know what their purpose is in life, and it doesn't enter into your mind or your space or your spirit right away, because sometimes you're on another path and you're like, you know, one day it just drops in your heart, in your mind, in your lap, and it's like, this is not the direction I want to go in, you know. And I feel like I was getting that vision and those thoughts. I was on another path. I've been in, I want to say, the world of medicine for a long time. I initially started out as a practicing physician assistant. And so, you know, my, I want to say, professional career, I want to say it spans almost a half a century. Most
no
people
way.
Say, no, you have not been. Okay, almost. Almost. But yeah, I've been, when I tell people when I graduated, they're like, oh my God, I wasn't even born then. I'm like, yeah.
Well, so I just want to pause you for a minute because our listeners can't see you, but I mean, you appear very young. You look like
I am young.
Mid-30s.
Like, I feel like I'm young. I'm young in spirit and in the way that I approach life. So yeah, I've been practicing medicine since 79, 80.
Wow. Like, my mind is blown. What is your secret? What's your, just to say, you're gonna have to share your skincare routine.
Yeah, because as I'm looking at myself, I'm like, oh my, I'm getting some wrinkles under my eyes.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely amazing, Sakina. That's phenomenal.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the compliment.
Of course. So you were a physician's assistant, and then something took you down this path.
And then, you know, listening to my grandmother, and I just feel like I was spiritually led to this path. Mm. I was birthed into the hands of my grandmother, and I really feel like she played a role into my journey as a midwife. It wasn't immediate, because when you find your purpose, you don't find it right away. It like comes to you at some point. And so I found my purpose. This is my dharma in life. I'm supposed to do this. This is why I'm here. I was a breech birth, and my grandmother birthed me in a home in my our project apartment on the Lower East Side of Manhattan. And, you know, breech births are a little, could be complicated and can have a poor outcome, because I was feet first. So, but I survived. She, you know, unraveled the cord, as I was told the story, of course, and I was considered a blue baby. They always say that, but of course she resuscitated me. And I don't want to leave my mom out of this, but
yeah, she gave birth.
She was working hard too.
It was very precipitous. You know, I believe that her hands are the reasons why I'm on this journey. Like, she led me to this path. So
thank you so much for sharing that. That is absolutely beautiful.
Yeah. I love hearing that. From my own experiences, my husband was with us, and it was a very intimate setting with both of our births. And
yeah,
I do have to say that we talk about it all the time, about how he caught the girls and cut their cords. And it's just a remarkable experience. So miraculous. Okay. Throughout your midwifery career, you have had the privilege of working predominantly in out-of-hospital settings, like we were just talking with home births. You mentioned on your website that you've been honored to assist thousands of women and families in achieving a satisfying, safe, transformative, joy-filled, loving pregnancy, labor, and birth experience. You also state, quote, "I firmly believe in improving and enhancing the lives of women whose voices often go unheard, particularly within marginalized communities. Central to my mission is the drive to diminish inequities in the reproductive and birth spaces. I am dedicated to combating the troubling statistics of maternal mortality by advocating for comprehensive care that addresses the unique needs and challenges faced by women, especially women of color," end quote. One of our initiatives with Her Health Collective is educating on the need for quality of care for all women. Will you please share how midwifery, and specifically home birthing, are promising answers towards a future where women receive culturally responsive care?
Yeah, how do we do that? Well, let me just say this, and I'm going to speak from a space of sincerity in my heart and also my practice. The way we do it is by centering the needs of our clients. And what does that really mean? It means really, I want to say, creating a trust currency. And what does that mean? That means getting to know your client, getting to know your patient, creating a relationship. And the only way you do that is by spending time. So you have to spend some time getting to know what the needs are of your patient, of the couple, of the family. And the only way to do that, again, is by spending adequate time. So we focus on spending at least 45 minutes to an hour with every single client at every single visit. Because it's important to understand where this client is in her life cycle. What are some challenges she may be going through for this pregnancy? May not have come up for the last one. Are there any financial issues that we could help her work out? Are there any behavioral health or mental health issues that she may need some more therapy with? Should we address some medication? Should we alter it? Should we, you know, stop it? What are her needs? Is she going through a divorce, separation? Does she have childcare issues? So it takes time to establish that kind of relationship so that your client feels comfortable sharing and divulging that, right? So that's why I always say we center the needs of our clients, because it's really all about them. It's not about me. It's about you. This is a very pivotal, monumental event that's going on in her life, if it's a first, second, or third. And so we need to really see where she is in this pregnancy. Is this pregnancy wrought with some stressors that might not have been identified in the last one? You know, are there some nutritional issues? I mean, where are you, you know? So I like to start my visits off by either allowing the client to, I want to say, not so much unravel, but if she needs to unravel, okay. But just spend some time allowing her to get centered, take a deep breath, let go, and then start the visit.
So as far as home birthing, there's quite a bit of stigma attached to midwifery care, home birth, and it causes a lot of women to shy away from it. Like I said, I've experienced it firsthand when we decided to do a home birth.
Yeah.
Got a lot of questions and people were concerned. And my husband and I were just very adamant that that's what we wanted to do. Mm-hmm. I'm just very curious on how you feel that this stigma can be changed and how specifically home birthing can help women receive better care.
So that's a good question, because it impacts the practices of a lot of midwives, a lot of my sister midwives, this stigma. And a lot of it is rooted in misunderstanding, lack of knowledge, and just fear. Some of it is fear.
Absolutely.
But again, ignorance, misunderstanding, lack of information. And again, it's how we've been socialized to think about pregnancy. So most people have been convinced, socialized, acculturated into thinking if you're pregnant, you are automatically go to the hospital. You should be taken care of by a doctor. So it's the way you've been socialized. And so you can't really blame the dominant culture of how they think and why they behave the way that they do. You know, in terms of, okay, you get pregnant, you go to the doctor, you have your baby in the hospital. They've been socialized to think that way, to respond that way when they become pregnant. So it's about changing the way people think, or raising awareness, or shifting the way that people think about it, helping them get a better understanding about the professionalism around midwifery, raising awareness around the rigorous education and certification process that midwives have to undergo. And also that, you know, hiring a midwife doesn't mean that you're getting less than optimal care, you know?
Right.
So, you know, that stigma is around midwifery as well. So it's about using platforms such as this one to re-educate and shift information around pregnancy, around home birth, around midwives.
To our Patreon supporters, thank you. We appreciate you so much. Our goal has always been for moms to know they're not alone in the tough and challenging phases of motherhood. We know Mama Needs a Moment provides this to our listeners.
We are thrilled with the growth of the podcast over the past 2 years. Last year, Spotify shared that Mama Needs a Moment was in the top 30% most followed podcasts, was heard in 9 countries, and had more content than 97% of other creators in the family category.
We have recently launched a Patreon account for Mama Needs a Moment. This is a great way for you to provide additional support to Her Health Collective.
We've set up 3 options for Patreon supporters, each with its very own perks, such as special events, discounts, and bonus content from each and every podcast guest that is available only to our Patreon supporters.
Will you become a Patreon supporter? It would mean the world to us. Sakina, can you very quickly share what education midwives do go through to get there?
Yes, I can. So I'm speaking in regards to certified midwives, certified nurse midwives, and certified professional midwives. All of us have to undergo an educational process. So I'm going to speak from what I have. My acronyms are a lot, and they mean something to some people. They mean a lot to me because of the investment, the money, et cetera, et cetera. But for some people, it means so much. They want to know what kind of schooling and education. It does speak volumes, okay, but it's not, it doesn't explain everything. So I have a master's degree in midwifery. Not all midwives have master's degrees. Some of them have doctorates in midwifery. I have a Bachelor of Science degree as well, and I'm licensed to practice in the state of New York, New Jersey, and North Carolina. So I have been through and graduated from a training program. And most midwives graduate from a training program where you receive your certification. So all programs, I don't care what it is, a CPM program or a C, and then you get your certification when you graduate from that. When you take your boards, that's another level. Then, depending on the state you practice in, you ask permission by giving them all of that I just talked about, the certification, to the state. Then the state says, okay, I'm going to grant you permission to practice in my state. That's all the state does. The state is just saying, did you pass your boards? Check.
Right.
Did you graduate from the program? Check. And pay me $100 every year, whatever it is, $400, right. $200. Now you can practice. People think it's something else. I'm like, no, they just provided a pathway to allow you to practice in that state.
And to have a license in certain states,
to have a license to practice in that state.
Do you have continuing education? So does a midwife have to kind of prove her continuing education to continue having that license?
Depending on the year you graduated and where you graduated.
Oh, okay.
So for me, okay, it gets a little complicated when you get into CEUs, continuing education. Let me just say this. We all have to, most practitioners have to participate in some type of continuing ed process. And it might be every 3 years, every 2 years, every 5 years. Some people have to recertify. PAs too. I think doctors do too. So most practitioners have to participate in continuing ed throughout their career. I want to say for a certified professional midwife, and the reason why I speak so highly about certified professional midwives, because they're community-based midwives, one. Two, because I have a program called A Woman's Way Warrior Midwife Training, and that is a community-based midwife program, certified professional midwifery program. So when the students graduate from my program, they receive a certificate like they do at any place else, and then they are prepared through my program through knowledge and skills, the theory and didactic to sit for their boards. Once they pass their boards, they now get the credentials CPM. Once they have their credentials CPM, depending on the state you practice in, that state has their own policy around how do you acquire your license to practice in that state. Now, some states now, there are only 36 states that grant licensure to CPMs.
Oh,
but there are all 52 states grant licensure for CNMs. So I'm both a certified nurse midwife. I'm also a CM and I'm also a CPM. I'm all of them. That means a lot to some people. I practice in the state of North Carolina. North Carolina does not provide a pathway for CPMs to practice legally in their state. Do we have a bill? Yes, we have, I think, two bills that did not pass last year, but I believe they're going to propose them in 2025.
So based on the states that you are licensed to practice in, you said New York, New Jersey, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. Are there differences? Do you notice differences in the way that they allow the midwife to practice?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Culturally, differences too. So New York, freely practice, but it's a very hostile medical healthcare system. New Jersey and New York is about the same. Hostile. The community is hostile, meaning other practitioners, because they impose their personal feeling about midwives, whether they endorse home birth or not, that impacts the way in which they interact with us. It's not a nice relationship in New York and New Jersey. What I can say is there are some hospitals that know that it's legal. I'm speaking about New Jersey now, that know that certified midwives and certified nurse midwives can practice at a hospital and or a birth center, but they may have their own policies that are barriers to the practice of midwifery.
Okay.
And it's very complicated, but people do what they want. If you have a good old boy hospital run by a good old boy board, they don't bend with the state. They don't bend with the federal law or the state law. I've lived those experiences, so I could tell you that firsthand. They don't. Yeah.
When you're referring to New York and New Jersey, is that statewide or is that more centralized to the areas around the city?
Well, I was talking about New York City, not the state. I worked in New York City. Mm-hmm. So when I was talking about culture, I'm talking about New York City.
Okay.
But licensure is the state, period.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And do you have contacts throughout? See, I'm formerly from New York State. I grew up in upstate New York.
Right.
And I'm just really curious about the state in its entirety, mm-hmm. because I don't hear about a lot of people using midwives or having home births in New York State.
New York State. I got you. No, there's a very thriving midwifery community in New York State. Thriving.
Oh, in the state. Okay. Wow. Yes, that's amazing.
In the state, NIAC, all over. Yeah. In the city and the state. Big in the city, smaller in the state, but it's thriving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic to hear.
Yeah.
I'm curious if there are any states that have less stringent controls and that midwifery and home births are more universally used.
Absolutely.
I'm thinking of a couple. California, I'm sure you're probably going to say, right?
No, I was going to say Washington, New Mexico, Vermont. Those are states that integrate the healthcare system, midwifery into their healthcare system. And they have laws that endorse midwifery. So New Mexico, Washington, and Vermont, those are leading, and they have laws around Medicaid reimbursement for midwifery services. So those are the three areas that can be barriers to midwifery care: health insurance, the integration into the system, and access, of course, to midwives, depending on your limitation of your health insurance.
Right. And it would be really interesting to look at statistics on fetal health and maternal health in those particular states and how they're
absolutely
different.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's look at countries. The countries that integrate the midwifery model of care into their healthcare system, particularly maternal healthcare system, have better outcomes, perinatal outcomes. So when you look at Finland, and when you look at the UK, when you look at Japan, those are countries that have better outcomes because they, I'm talking about maternal care now, maternal morbidity and mortality, they have better outcomes. The United States, we are not doing very well. I think we rank 26, and we're an industrialized country, so we should be up there, right? We should be at the top 10. We spend the most, but have one of the poorest maternal mortality and morbidity rates. So statistically, no. So we have evidence and we have statistics to show and prove that midwifery-led care has better outcomes, less intervention, less C-section, improved breastfeeding rates, lower postpartum depression rates.
Yeah, the numbers in the U.S. are pretty abysmal when you look at these aspects.
I loved that episode with Sakina. It hit really home for me because of my experiences, but it was lovely to spend time with her.
She is an impressive woman and really does just give off such a presence. I very much enjoyed our time with her. And in this first half of our conversation, I was really moved by her discussion of the importance of a provider creating a relationship with their patient and how the biggest way to do that is with time. I loved that she said that they spend 45 minutes to an hour with every patient every time they visit. I remember going to see my OBGYN. I got maybe 10 minutes with them. You know, that is a big deal. And that truly is, when you're spending that much time with someone, you're building a relationship. And that's going to change the type of care and even just how you feel throughout the process of your care. So I was very moved by that. I very much appreciated that little piece of knowledge and wish that that was more universally accepted as part of our system.
Oh,
how about
absolutely.
You?
That's, well, what you had just mentioned is definitely an obstacle that many of our experts talk about when they begin steering away from insurance, and they want to spend more time with their patients. And I have to admit, it was a beautiful thing to have a midwife spend so much time with Mark and I when we were pregnant with our oldest daughter. And then we also had midwives for the birth of our youngest daughter as well. But I felt very seen. I felt heard. I felt cared for. And it was so interesting how she went into the flexibility in the different states. I really loved that. I remember growing up, like I said in the episode, I grew up in upstate New York around Rochester area, a very small town. And when I was growing up, we had a family that did a home birth. And I remember how it was when we heard about it. We were like, oh my gosh, are you serious? They're having a home birth and the other kids are going to be there? What is this? It was scandalous. And, you know, that I hadn't really heard of many people having home births, which is why during the episode I had mentioned that about
New York. I wonder how much of that is the time period too. I wonder, because I know we had talked about the states and the differences in the states, but we didn't really touch on timeline of the acceptance of, you know, having a midwife and home births. And
yeah, absolutely. Everything. Absolutely. So I loved that piece where she was just talking through the differences in the states. And she had talked about how being in New York City, there was more flexibility for her. And then I was very surprised about the state she mentioned. I was thinking she would say something like California and Colorado, that they would, you know, be some of the more lenient states when it came to supporting midwives. But no, I think it was Vermont, Washington, and New Mexico. That was very interesting to me.
We've enjoyed hanging out with you today, friend. We hope you got to finally enjoy a hot cup of coffee as you listened. Make sure you follow us so you're the first to know when we drop a new episode.
If you've enjoyed your time with us, let us know by leaving a review. We always love hearing from you. Until next time, stay true to you.